This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. I've tried to experiment. I have two TV monitors here in the studio with me, and there's three cable networks. And so I've been, the last year or so, it's been CNN and MSNBC, but I flipped CNN for Fox. And so I've been watching the Chiron on Fox all morning. It was fascinating, you know, the conversations that they've been having about, you know, why is the mainstream media so hard on Donald Trump, and how the mainstream media lies about Trump, and, you know, can you trust the mainstream media? It's like, you really do get a sense that these guys live in a completely separate universe. But the breaking news on Fox so-called news right now is that the Republicans are going to hold a vote on their Trump care bill on Friday. Today is Wednesday. So day after tomorrow. The Republicans are going to come back and say, OK, we're going to try this again. And see, what has happened is by pulling the bill, Mitch McConnell has caused all the air to go out. You know, he's kind of deflated the opposition. The opposition's all, you know, congratulating themselves and planning their 4th of July weekend. And that's how these guys are going to slip this thing through. So do not stop. Go to TrumpCareToolkit.org and tweet out to everybody, and you know, this, I mean, they're going to do it again. And, you know, now you've got a few Congress people, Amy Klobuchar is on Fox right now saying, yeah, we can do this on a bipartisan basis. Right. And Senator Collins, the Republican from Maine, has said, you know, we can do this on a bipartisan basis. Well, on a bipartisan basis, give me single-payer health care. A bunch of news today that I wanted to get through. Some smaller things. Let me just kind of clear the board with these. Not smaller. These are important things, but they're just kind of one-off stories. There's a new movie about the prosecution, the political assassination of Don Siegelman, a friend of this show and a great guy, the former governor of Alabama, a Democrat who might well have been president of the United States. He was on that path. And then Karl Rove decided to take him down, and he did. And Siegelman ended up in prison. And the show has played. It's called Atticus versus the Architect: The Political Assassination of Don Siegelman. And it has already shown in Birmingham and Atlanta. And it was going to play at the Capri Theater in Montgomery, Alabama, except that the movie points out that Siegelman was being prosecuted in part by Bob Riley was the guy that Siegelman lost to. He actually defeated him in the 2002 election for governor of Alabama. He went to bed, he'd won. When he woke up, a Republican operative in one particular congressional district had discovered 15,000 people whose votes at the top of the ticket for governor, even though they voted for Democrats down ticket, they had all actually voted for the Republican, Bob Riley. When Don Siegelman started complaining about this, he soon found himself in prison. And the federal prosecutor at the time was a woman named Laura Canary. Her husband was managing Bob Riley's campaign. She's the one who started the prosecution against him. And so turns out she's on the board of this theater. And so the theater is refusing to play the movie. So I don't know if you are in the area of or have any influence with the Capri Theater, C-A-P-R-I, in Montgomery, Alabama, but you might want to let them know if you'd like to see the movie. Let's see, the title of the movie is Atticus versus the Architect. And of course, Atticus Finch, you know, from Gone with the Wind. Atticus is Don Siegelman, and the architect, of course, is Karl Rove. So it's Don Siegelman versus Karl Rove. Public Citizen. I got this email today from Rob Weissman, who is the head guy over at Public Citizen. And, I mean, it's part of a mass email. It's just not unique to me. It went out to, you know, probably thousands of people. But it's pretty important stuff. He says, Tom, tonight I'm going to be outside the Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C., down the street from the White House. I'll be protesting outside a fundraiser that President Trump will be holding inside. You know, Trump declared his 2020 campaign the day that he was inaugurated, or maybe the day after, it was one or the other, but I think it was the day that he was inaugurated. And so all of these events where he has these loving crowds, they're not actually president goes to meet the people events. They're campaign events where only campaign donors are allowed in. So he knows he's going to have a loving crowd, right? So, but he's raising money for his reelection, and he's using that money in a whole variety of ways, by and large politically, which he can legally do. But anyhow, back to Rob Weissman's email. He says, I'll be protesting outside a fundraiser that Donald Trump will be holding in the Trump International Hotel in D.C. tonight. The price of a ticket, $35,000. 91 million Americans make less than that every year. If you want to be on the host committee, it's $100,000. 227 million Americans make less than that. He says, our signs will point out that the fundraiser will benefit Trump personally through payments to his hotel, a hotel and a building he leases from the federal government. And then they go through a whole bunch of other things that a Public Citizen has been doing, which are absolutely brilliant. Citizen.org is their website, and I encourage you to check it out. And if you're in D.C. tonight, you might want to at least know that there is a protest going on of a Trump fundraiser at the Trump Hotel. Time Magazine is upset. The headline was confusing to me the first time I read it. It says, Time asks Trump Organization to remove fake cover from golf clubs. And I thought, who puts a magazine on a golf club? You know, what, are they wadding them up and covering the heads of the clubs with them or something? And then I realized it's like golf clubs like Mar-a-Lago, you know, or New Jersey or whatever the name of it is. Time Magazine has asked the Trump Organization to remove copies of a fake cover of Time Magazine of President Trump that were on display at the company's golf clubs, the Washington Post reported yesterday afternoon. The request came after the newspaper reported that at least four Trump-branded clubs had displayed a fake Time Magazine cover that depicted Trump with the headline, Donald Trump, the apprentice is a television smash. Right. So there's that. A Trump lawyer... Maybe you saw Jay Sekulow on TV last week, going out there. I had no idea about this until I read this reporting. It's in the Washington Post today. The story I'm reading from is by John Swain in New York from The Guardian. The headline, Trump lawyer targets poor for donations to fight Obamacare via charity that pays his family millions. And I'll just share a little bit of this article with you. Jay Sekulow, who this month again directed fundraisers for Christian Advocates Serving Evangelism, C-A-S-E, CASE, to push people for contributions if they said they could not afford to give money to the group, according to a contract obtained by The Guardian. This guy, Trump's lawyer, runs a Christian charity. Now, here's where it gets amazing. Fundraisers were asked, these are people making phone calls to you begging for money if you're a Christian. Fundraisers were told that if asked for information on Sekulow, the guy who is the head of it, they should say, he never charges for his services. However, since 2000, the not-for-profit group and an affiliate have steered more than $60 million to Sekulow, members of his family, and businesses that hold where they hold senior roles. You get this? Begging for money from poor Christians. And pushing them hard. I mean, you know, it's just pushing them really hard. This is one of the, Sekulow himself did this recorded message back in 2011. Islamic extremists are heading in your direction and you are most likely the main target. Islamist extremists will succeed if we don't do something right away. And telemarketers were instructed to tell people who initially said they could not donate that Islamist extremists will succeed if we don't do something right away. If the person resisted a second time, the script said to tell them, it sounds like you really want to help. The group raises more than $40 million a year, mostly from small contributions made by Christians across the U.S. who receive alarmist political messages by telephone or in the mail. The instructions to the telephone fundraisers, listen, empathize, and relate to people who said that they could not afford to donate to CASE before pushing those people twice more for an urgently needed gift. A script signed by Sekulow told the marketers to, quote, overcome the objection to donating, end quote, and to tell the person on the line that, quote, many people are finding ways to help with smaller amounts as well. People receiving calls in 2010 who declined to donate on the grounds they generally could not afford to contribute were told by telemarketers, quote, I wouldn't call if this weren't an absolute emergency. They point out abortions were funded by Obamacare, which is not true. And just in the time we've talked, this is from the script that the telemarketers used for Sekulow's charity. Just in the time we've talked, three more innocent babies have lost their lives. Millions of lives may be at stake. This is if you were still resistant to donating. People who initially resisted a request to donate money in 2012 were told, quote, unbelievably, through Obamacare, Planned Parenthood could run a health care clinic in your child or grandchild's middle school or high school and receive federal dollars to do it, end quote. Callers in 2014 who said they could not donate were warned, it's clear that Planned Parenthood's primary motivation is the dollar. Right. Ironically, that year, again, quoting from The Guardian today, that year, Sekulow's not-for-profit groups paid him and three companies where he held leading roles $4.8 million in compensation contracts. His brother Gary received a pay package totaling $848,000 for being chief financial officer and chief operating officer. A production company owned by Gary's wife Pam was paid $677,000 in contracts. Gary and Pam's son Adam received $237,000 as director of development. Another $139,529 in compensation was shared by Jay Sekulow's wife, the secretary for the not-for-profit group, and their two sons who were directors. Wow. I mean, doesn't that kind of tell you everything you need to know about the Trump administration and the people around them? And finally, well, actually, I'll get to this a little later on, but they just some amazing information on how the bacteria in your skin or on your skin or both, is actually is used by your body to fight eczema and acne. I got to tell you about this. Plus, deregulation in the UK, finally under the microscope with the Grenfell Tower fire. Be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And of course, it's Anything Goes Summer, so anything you want to talk about, we'll pick up your calls right after. And welcome back, Dion in Round Lake, Illinois. Hey, Dion, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Senator Mike Lee said that the health care repeal is a bailout for the health insurance companies. So I wanted to ask you, how do you think it is a bailout for the health insurance companies? And my other question, too, is how do you think bankrupt Illinois will affect the residents there?
Yeah, on the Illinois question, I honestly don't know. I'm not a close observer of that state's politics. I know that Bruce Rauner, you know, hiring a billionaire as your governor, as the people of Illinois did, typically, especially a right-wing billionaire, typically means that pretty soon your state's going to be in a crisis because he's going to take care of his billionaire buddies and screw everybody else. And apparently that's what happened. So anyhow, Carol in Charleston, New Hampshire. Hey, Carol, what's up?
Yeah, you were talking about Jay Sekulow.
Yeah.
I've gotten several calls from him years ago trying to get money out of me.
Uh-huh.
And he's affiliated with billionaire Pat Robertson. It's like his right-hand man.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, because I used to watch the television show to find out what's going on. And
yeah, the 700 Club, isn't it?
700 Club, yeah, they're buddy buddy.
Wow,
and that's why Sekulow was running Trump's illegal stuff. Pat Robertson is like, you know, in charge of it.
Wow,
I just thought everybody should know that because I knew about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not inconceivable. I mean, it's pretty bizarre. Okay, Carol, thank you. Thanks for the heads up on that. Craig in Encinitas, California. Hey, Craig, thanks for listening on TuneIn. What's up?
Hey, great talking to you, Tom. Hey, I'm really baffled by the Democrats thinking that they can work with the Republicans. And haven't they learned anything from the last 8 years that the Republicans don't want to work with them?
Well, not only that, the Republicans have no loyalty to the Democratic process, small d Democratic process, in our small R republic. They have no loyalty to the people, to the voters.
Nope.
Their single sole loyalty is to the billionaires in the Koch network. And their single hope for the future is that those billionaires will continue to pour millions into their political campaigns every campaign season so that they can get reelected by basically BSing the people, by fooling the people. And
yeah, and like you said, BSing the people with a full-on 24/7 Fox News.
Yeah, yeah.
My family members are totally brainwashed, and it kills me. You know, and I've told you this before, maybe a month ago, and it took all this Republican obstructionism to finally convince my girlfriend, who is a full-on progressive, that the Republicans, and I don't like to use this because it's probably a bad thing.
Please don't say a word you can't say on the air.
No, they're evil.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a cuss word or anything.
Yeah.
But they put themselves out as all these holy Christians.
Yeah.
And that's really hypocritical to me.
Yeah, I don't disagree. In fact, I would say that the people who are the principal victims of the Republicans are well-intentioned Christians, elderly people who watch Fox News, and, well, anybody who watches Fox News, frankly. I mean, they're not so much victims of the Republicans as they are victims of billionaire Rupert Murdoch and his billionaire schemes. Craig, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Anything Goes Summer. Anything you want to talk about? Rocco in Chicago. Hey, Rocco. Thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, last week we learned that that Vladimir Putin ordered an attack on the United States. This was an intentional attack. In my mind, and I think in many people's mind, this takes Russia from being an adverse foreign power to our enemy. Now that, moving forward, from this point forward, knowing this information that they are our enemy, should our president in any way defer to them, do business with them, his family do business with them? Are they not colluding with an enemy?
Yeah. It's a tough one, Rocco, because, you know, let's assume that this is true. I'm frankly inclined to believe that it's true, that the specifics of the involvement, by the way, were hacking the DNC, whose password was password, weirdly enough, and then putting that information out through WikiLeaks. And you know, which reflected very poorly on Debbie Wasserman Schultz and on Hillary Clinton's campaign. That level of intervention in another country, first of all, that, you know, is something that we should all condemn. If Russia did this, absolutely, everybody should condemn it. And there have already been consequences. I mean, there's been a bunch of penalties to Russia for this, the expulsions of diplomats, the economic embargoes and sanctions and things. But we have involved ourselves in other countries' elections as well. And I don't hear, Egypt calling us an enemy because we involved ourselves in basically overthrowing the democratically elected government there and replacing it with a military junta, among others. I mean, there's dozens of them. It's not to draw an equivalence, but there are so many areas where it seems to me that there should be a natural alliance between us and Russia. We worked together on the Iran deal. We worked together on getting the poison gas out of Syria. It looks like maybe that wasn't all that successful. But I'm not willing to totally throw the thing out, but I think that this is an issue that, you know, should be a topic for conversation, and I guess we just did. Anyhow, Rocco, thanks for the call. RJ in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hey, RJ, what's up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Quickly.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just a great fan of yours. I just want to give a quick bit of information on 401k. There's a guy I call the Bernie Sanders of that investing for the little guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got free podcasts, free books, e-books for your listeners. And I would love for you to get him and interview him. His name is Paul Merriman. He's out of the Northwest. It's the best information I've ever gotten, free.
Hmm. Okay.
It's solid. I guarantee someone like you, if you went through his podcast and his books, like I say, they're online.
Yeah.
Go to his website. And your listeners, if you get this guy on, he would be your
sweet. I'll check it out, RJ. I understand that there's some people who are who have used their 401ks very effectively. I never have. So I can't, you know, it's not something I, well, anyhow. RJ, thanks.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. It's 28 minutes past the hour. You can support the Tom Hartman Program and see video of our entire three-hour show over at patreon.com/Tom Hartman. Welcome back. It's Anything Goes Summer, and Peter in Harmony, Rhode Island. Hey, Peter, thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's up?
Hey, Tom. So I became a precinct committee person, but not the way you advised us to. I was just basically appearing at the state house and advocating for stick days bills and early voting bills, and my state rep kept noticing it, so he just invited me to join in the town precinct committee. So I did.
Wow, is that great, Peter?
Yeah. So last week, we had a vote for a new town chair. And it was
for a new what chair?
Town chairman.
Oh, so the equivalent of a mayor kind of thing, or head of the city council?
Yes, yes, that's right. And we had two progressive candidates. And I was the youngest person. That we had about 46 people. I was, you know, most people are over 60. I'm only 29. So we had a vote for two progressive candidates for the town chair and the vice chair. And in both instances, they lost 17-29 and 18-28. And we're guessing the reason was because most of the people there were the old guard, you know, the old Democratic guard. And when the first progressive candidate lost the first position, the town chair, and he was nominated for the vice chair, he just withdrew. So I'm wondering why he did that. Maybe he got dismayed by the results. But you know, he had an impressive CV. He has a PhD, BA in political science. He's a professor. He has a vast political experience, political activism. And the guys who ran against him were just some older guys named Anthony. I'm not making this up. And they had no introduction. You know, there was no introduction for their CV or their political experience, nothing like that. But they won handedly. Mm-hmm. So now I'm wondering, well, what do we do now? You know, it looks like we have to wait a decade or something to be able to take over the Democratic Party, at least where I live, unless I'm able to recruit more youngsters. But it's tough. It's not just enough to, you know, go and vote. I guess we need to increase the turnout for the younger people. But how do I get them involved when most people that I know don't really care about politics? So I'm just very, you know, depressing.
I have seen this in politics, you know, in like governmental politics. I've also seen this. I was, you know, when we lived in Portland, we lived in a floating home that was owned by the community. I mean, you know, the individual houses were individually owned, but the marina structure and everything was community owned. So there was basically the equivalent of a homeowners association. And I was on the board for 2 years. And I've seen the same thing in that kind of an environment. And I think it's just kind of a dimension of human nature that there had been people who were on that board for 15 years, and they just wanted to do things the way that they always did them, which by and large, well, on a few occasions, inured more benefit to the longtime members than to the short-term members. Or in the past, it had inured substantial benefit to what are now the long-term members. And they were kind of hanging on to hold on to their privilege, as it were. And you know, it produced some conflict, but it also, I mean, they were also good people who were really committed. And you see the same thing in politics. I think that probably the other people didn't need an introduction because they'd done their political homework. They had gone around and met everybody, introduced themselves. Everybody knew who they were, I'm guessing, Peter. I mean, this is how it typically plays out. And you guys just got politically played. And so there's two steps to overcoming that. Number one is to start playing the political game politically. That is to you know, show up at the meetings, get to know people, get to know them personally, you know, start building bridges between progressives and the old guard, as it were, in your local party organization. And number two, yeah, there's a certain element of there are some people who are just so stuck in the way that they've always done things and the way and their particular worldview that you're just going to have to wait until they move out of the way, whether they die off or whether they just retire or just decide, hey, this isn't worth the trouble. But the bottom line, I think, is that if you persist and if you can bring more and more people into the process, the odds are it's not going to take a decade. Is that I hope that's encouraging, Peter.
No, thank you.
Okay, good luck. And you know, good on you for participating. I mean, that's step one. You know, we're all in this culture kind of addicted to instant gratification. It rarely happens in politics. It takes time. And I'm so pleased, Peter, that you're part of the process. We need people like you in it. Thank you so much for the call. Chillis in Cleveland, Ohio. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, Phyllis. I'm in East Cleveland,
Ohio. Oh, Phyllis.
Ohio.
I'm sorry.
Hey, Tom. Wonderful show. And I thought I would die when they took Al Jazeera off. And then we found you.
Oh, great.
So
thank you.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about urban education because I am an urban educator, retired.
Mm-hmm.
But I still work part-time or whenever the district has a need for an administrator. Tom, I am so very disappointed. We were talking about at one point with a group of people the dumbing down of America. I don't know if you remember how prevalent that used to be. We used to see it everywhere we went. The dumbing down of America. When you go into an urban school in my area, you see the consequences of that. The dumbing down of America, because our children,
for example,
are not being educated. And I don't. I know there. We have this. Ohio is one of gave really a big push for Bessie DeVos's form of education, and we have a lot of charter schools in Ohio. Maybe it's number three in the country. But the point is that in those charter schools, everything you ever heard about with them not accepting children that have problems or putting them out rapidly, all that did actually happen.
Sure.
Now we have our children in public schools, and nobody wants to educate them. We have teachers that are disinterested. The educational system is disinterested. And they're saying, in my area, that we have a large number of children now being educated, graduating from school, but now they can't enter college because they're not prepared.
Right.
It's just so disgusting.
Phyllis, feel free to challenge me on this, but I'm going to offer an outrageous opinion here. I think that, or what would be viewed as outrageous by the other side, I think that what we're seeing is the legacy of racism and slavery, or the legacy of slavery in the modern form of racism. That the argument, prior to the Civil War was that people of color are not fully human. The argument after the Civil War was, keep them separate and don't educate them. The argument after Brown versus Board of Education was people of color don't have the same intellect as white people. This was revived a few years ago by Charles Murray's book, The Bell Curve, which is using terrible, terrible science. Charles Murray, of course, has been rehabilitated and is now, regular in Republican circles. And the argument then was, well, why even bother to fund their schools? Because after all, they're never going to really, amount to anything educationally, with the wink, wink, nod, nod among the white people about the Charles Murray stuff. And then when there was an opportunity to make money off educating children of color, then the Betsy DeVos thing, then suddenly it became, oh, well, we can educate anybody. Just give us the money and we'll run a for-profit charter school. And then the first thing they start doing is kicking out kids who are disadvantaged. And this becomes a multi-generational thing, the consequences of this, as I'm sure you well know. And I don't think that a lot of this is going to change until, in particular, white people in America get it, that there's really fundamentally no difference between white people and black people and everybody in between, and that we just need to have equal educational opportunity for everybody. And the way to do that is not by bringing in the hucksters and the hustlers that Betsy DeVos wants. What do you think of what I'm saying, Phyllis?
I think that's excellent. But we have to throw in another ideation, because there was a time when schools were separated.
Yes.
And our people really excelled at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't have that group of people excelling again, because they found out that was a mistake.
Mm.
The oligarchs. Putting all those African-American people together, not allowing them to educate people that were educated to go into very many other occupations except education, the same religion, that kind of stuff,
right.
Nursing.
Right.
So they were relegated to teach. So we had excellent teachers teaching, and people made progress. Mm-hmm. Now that progress has stopped because we no longer have those people teaching.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, you have to throw that into the equation, too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's this whole cycle, and it has to do with these perspectives on race that I'd say a lot of white people don't even realize they're walking around with. Others are, you know, aggressive advocates for these racist policies. And this is the core stuff that needs to change if we're going to make this country work. Phyllis, thanks so much for the call and for raising a really important issue. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be checking in with Talk Media News in a few minutes and then back to your phone calls. Charles Sauer is going to drop by. We'll have a debate at the top of the hour, and it's anything goes summer. Plus, there's a lot more news. And welcome back, Kurt, watching Free Speech TV in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Kurt, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. First of all, I just want to thank you and Free Speech TV for really creating a forum that's just wonderful. I mean, we're actually discussing the issues. What's on my mind is something that you've been talking about, is that the plight of the working poor. It seems to me that the working poor is often portrayed as not having the skills, and yet we're once given at least the distinction of working class.
So, therefore, what?
I think we need to create a system in which people get more benefits, because the compensation of, you know, when I go to a store and interact with someone who's a barista or a grocery clerk, I'm aware of the extreme stress that these individuals are under. And it seems that people who talk about cutting the benefits, or, for example, the current health care program, it just doesn't seem sympathetic. So we got to do something, because we're going to, if we don't address it, we'll be missing out. And I know you've been addressing it, so I'll let you speak a little. I've been kind of rambling a little.
Sure. No, I get what you're saying. And I would identify a couple of different issues here. One is that these low paid jobs are actually a scam. It is a government welfare program for giant corporations and their billionaire CEOs. They pay just low enough, and sometimes to the penny, that their employees qualify for food stamps, for sometimes public housing, for Medicaid, for government paid education, or excuse me, healthcare. They pay just low enough that their employees qualify for all these federal and state programs, and thus their business is being subsidized by virtue of their employees being subsidized. And then the second part of it, of course, is that the people themselves are not making enough money to be able to even begin the process of stepping up to a better quality job. They don't have the time, the resources, financial and time-wise, to, for example, go to trade school or go to college at night or whatever it may take, to step up in the job world. And in many cases, those resources simply are not even available to them. So it's kind of a vicious cycle. And the corporate chieftains, from the fast food industry to the retail industries, are loving the idea that their industry is subsidized to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars every year by the federal and state governments, because they're low-wage employers. And the way to blow that up, the way to put an end to that, is to raise the minimum wage to the point above the point where people qualify, so that people no longer qualify for government assistance programs. And thus, the labor marketplace starts looking more like a labor marketplace rather than an excuse for a corporate subsidy. And, when President Obama proposed a $12 minimum wage, that number was very specifically calculated as the number at which most people, if they're working at least 35 hours a week, no longer qualify for benefits. And that's pretty tight. I mean, that's that little slice in between, being really poor and working class. I think $15 an hour for most of the country, and in big cities even more than that, is just an entirely reasonable way to start dealing with this. And also, making college free and making health care free, making them both available to everybody. Those are the things that will break this class rigidity that we've got. Kurt, thanks for the call. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. On the line with us, Bob Ney, the author of Sideswiped, a brilliant book about what happens here in Washington, D.C. Congressman, welcome back to the program. I missed you.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I always miss you and your show.
Thank you.
But so, I listen to your show. I just am not on it.
Oh, well, great. Well, thank you. Sure. So what's going on in the world, Bob?
Well, I wanted to add one thing that it's not on our agenda today, but since you were talking about it at some point in time, too, you want to talk about corporations, subsidies, and slave labor, the prison industries.
Oh, yeah.
I witnessed it personally, up front and close, and it's bad.
After the Iranians brought you the note saying that they were willing to recognize Israel and have a rapprochement with the Bush administration, and you conveyed that to Bush and Cheney, and they immediately then threw you in jail, essentially. That's my narrative. Were the jail that you were thrown into, this was a for-profit prison?
Morgantown Federal Corrections. They had Unicor, and we called it something else that rhymes with core. And it's called Unicor. Let's say an average of big pay in prison, I think $43 a month plus a $10 bonus, $53 a month, and you do, quote, learning rehab, which means that you're programming in, sometimes on the telephone for corporations, exactly, telemarketing for them, doing all their programming for $63 a month.
Wow.
Right. And then that corporation goes out and has what type of advantage on other corporations, but you want to talk about slave labor. Of course, what are the prisoners going to do? You know, this is how they buy supplies. This is how they buy some food.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. And I should add, at the time that happened, you were the only member of Congress who spoke Farsi, the language of Iran.
That was it.
Anyhow, so what's going on in the world, Bob?
Well, the language of healthcare. How about we get into that? And what's really going on? And I've said this all day long when I've talked about this story. Mitch McConnell knew exactly what he was doing. I don't buy that Mitch McConnell made a mistake. He miscalculated. He knew exactly what he
was doing. Well, I'm seeing on Fox News here, I'm just reading the chyrons because I've been on the air, but it looks like he's going to bring this thing back out again on Friday.
Sure. He knew.
Now that nobody's paying attention.
Well, and what he's done, too, is he has allowed people to go back home. I'll take two examples. Senator Capito of West Virginia and Senator Portman, when I say go back home, to communicate back home, Senator Portman of Ohio, that they're going to fight this. It's a horrible bill. You know, therefore, you know, looking good, all right, because they're fighting this abomination of a bill that throws 22 million people off, gives the top, reduction to the corporate structure for tax breaks. And conservatives don't like it. The AARP doesn't like it, et cetera, et cetera.
AMA, yeah.
AMA, everybody. Now, normally you would say, well, if a lot of people don't like a bill, it's okay. No, this one's an abomination. This isn't even a starter, but it's out there, I think, for two reasons. One, it gives some cover for people to go back home and say, oh, this is terrible, but look at the alternative we will do, which is much better than the McConnell bill. Number two, it has an end objective that I argue is going to be the conference committee. I say this, Tom, because I've done private conference committees with Mitch McConnell, all right, the Help America Vote Act, with Senator Dodd, the late Senator Kennedy, Mitch McConnell, Steny Hoyer, et cetera. Mitch McConnell, you never knew where he was at, what game he was playing in that conference committee. So what's going to happen on this is his goal is tax relief. And I think he threw this out here. If they can't come up with something, eventually they'll try to come up with something. He'll go along with it. It'll get on a conference committee. That's where he adds what he really wants.
So in other words, they could pass a bill out of the Senate today that said, everybody in America is on Medicare, end of discussion. It goes to conference committee, and boom, suddenly there's $600 billion worth of tax cuts for billionaires, and nobody gets health insurance.
Yes, some type of cut. And when it comes, and I want to make this clear because people are like, well, they can save it on the floor. No, up or down vote on the floor, as you know, with no amendments.
Right.
Up or down. So therefore, a person like myself, let's say that the bill's tweaked, let's say it does some good things, let's say it makes some changes, right?
Right.
And then you go into a conference committee and not the full scale tax relief is added, but some is added, you know, that McConnell wants. And then you've got a bill where you're going to down that bill as a result of that, or are you going to hold your nose and vote as a result of that?
Right.
For good things. This is, I think he knew what he was doing. He didn't miscalculate. I argue against that when they say he miscalculated.
Yeah, I came to that conclusion about an hour ago just watching Fox, because they're all giddy about the fact that he's going to probably hold a vote on this thing on Friday.
Yeah. And, you know, if it goes down, they'll come back with something. He'll eventually try to get his way.
Right. Amazing. What else is up, Bob?
Well, speaking of Fox, I don't know how you feel on this. I'm doing all day radio, so I couldn't tune into your show like I like to. But, you know, this whole CNN and Huckabee Sanders and, you know, don't get me wrong, there's all kinds of sins here and there. And she brought up a tape that is considered fake news because nobody knows if it's real. But I would also point out, you know, like Judge Judy says, come into court with clean hands. CNN loves this controversy. And why? Because it's, you know, corporate media that
they're playing the same game that Trump is, which it doesn't matter what you say about me, just don't spell my name wrong.
I think they are. Look, they like the highlight. CNN takes on Trump. Huckabee Sanders goes after CNN. They've got to love it.
Yeah.
I don't know how much is real and I don't know how much is fake, but I'm just saying on both sides, they have to love this. It distracts the main picture for the White House. It's able to be a distraction of the main, you know, items that are going on. Yeah. So I would think.
Yeah, I think it hadn't occurred to me, but I'll bet you're right.
Maybe on this one, I just think CNN's got some motives. And on motives, I also want to point out we're carrying the Syria. Talk Media News is carrying the Syria story today. Remember that Donald Trump didn't want to expose, like Barack Obama did, what he's going to do in the Mideast, right? He didn't want to. He didn't right. think it should be exposed. Well, it's been exposed. You know, you do this, you're preparing the gas. We don't know what sources this comes from. We don't know if they are preparing gas. Maybe they are. Maybe they aren't. But the fact remains that Saudi Arabia would love to manipulate us into a war with Russia and Iran in Syria. Saudi Arabia would love to do that. And I'm just looking at the information coming out, and I think they better be very, very cautious with who's providing this information, what is reality. And, you know, now all of a sudden we are becoming us versus Russia versus Iran, you know, in Syria. Versus the ISIS component, which is right. where we were supposed to
this
be.
This could be a formula for World War III.
I think it's very dangerous.
And it seems to me that the Saudis have been playing Donald Trump ever since they did that giant reception for him in whichever city it was.
Well,
Riyadh, I think.
Riyadh. And also, Tom, a friend of mine in Saudi Arabia, he is Saudi Arabian. He called me. He said as Donald Trump went down the street, they had TV screens, great big TVs placed on the street, his picture on it, you know, the whole nine yards, playing to his ego as his cars were going down the street in Saudi Arabia.
Right. And then Wilbur Ross, his commerce secretary, the billionaire, says, wow, it's amazing. There wasn't a single voice of dissent when we were in Saudi Arabia. That's because if you dissent, you get your head cut off.
Chop your head. I used to live in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And then all of a sudden we come out against Qatar, and we have a base there with 11,000 people.
Right.
And Saudi Arabia doesn't like them. And I'm not saying any of these countries are free from sins, but the Saudis saying they need to rein in the Iranians is like Jesse James bringing in the Dalton brothers.
Yeah, there you go. Well said. Congressman Bob Ney, the Talk Media News. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you so much.
And be sure to check out Bob's book, Sideswiped. We'll be right back. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.